Yes, part of two. One moment. Yes, sir?
Hi, meeting Mr. Sussman?
Yes, he's right there, sir.
Mr. Sussman.
Mr. Sussman is my father, and he lives in Miami Beach.
It's Neil. Please sit.
Now, my wife and I come here all the time, and I will tell you that the gaucho steak is wonderful.
Okay, sounds good.
Are those contacts?
No.
I would kill for that color. I've always been stuck with hazel. Look, Nick, I'm not going to bullshit you. I don't know you. I don't know your work. But I think that you are a very, very talented young man. And I'm never wrong about these things. Excuse me. Keith. Mm.
Yes.
Could I have another Cointreau and Sody? And could you send an almond tort over to the gentleman in the white suit in the corner?
Certainly.
Look, Nick, I'm not going to bullshit you. Because it's a waste of time, and then it becomes like that thing. Oh. I'm not talking to you. I'll call you. I'm very, very aware that you are seeing other agents. And I think it's good that you are. Finally, I mean, it's healthy. But this is the thing. If you decide to sign with me, you're going to get more than an agent. You're going to get three people. You're going to get an agent, a mother, a father, a shoulder to cry on, someone who knows this business inside and out. And if anyone ever tries to cross you, I'll grab them by the balls and squeeze till they're dead. Excuse me. Keith, did you send over the tort?
Yes, sir.
And what was his reaction?
Well, he seemed pleased, but beneath the surface, I detected a certain sadness.
Hello, all my friends, to the show that never ends, and the life we lead continues to push on. We've all had a rotten day, so what's Juskow gonna say? He hopes to take a moment of your time to make you feel much better when you hear about his day. A little magic power makes your problems seem okay. You're looking for action and nothing that new. Juskow in the City is the podcast for you. If you like listening to things that no one else would do, Juskow in the City is the podcast for you. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Juskow in the City, April 16th, flying by, class, everything, you know, all that, thinking of everything as a student at this point. Summer is almost here. It's kind of incredible. When you work at a job for so many years, all of us, 30 or 40 years, and you don't think of summer vacation anymore, oh boy. I'm ready, and it's pretty exciting. Well, let's just tell you what's going on. First of all, I'll tell you this, and welcome to the show, everybody. It's an interesting day in New York. It's just been windy and rainy, and sometimes the sun comes out and sometimes it doesn't. You know, I love giving the weather. I love it, but we are already in the midst of April, and everything's going on in the sense of Passover and Hitler's birthday. You know, I always bring up him because it's my mom's birthday. We're throwing the 90th. It's coming up next week, and oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Anyway, let me just tell you this. I had this incredible dream today. I don't think once in 8 years or however long we've been doing this podcast I've ever told you about a dream, but it was so interesting. It was my entire life that flashed before my eyes. I'd gone to bed after, it was after a complete 2 weeks of nonstop partying and work. I mean, nonstop. I didn't have one chance to turn on the TV and relax. It was work, 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 go to bed, work, work, regular job, my other jobs, everything. It was intense. And just last night was the ending where I could relax. But of course, I had Taco Bell before I went to bed, so I didn't sleep very well. So I woke up in the middle of the night, watched a little TV. Couldn't find one thing that was working, like the Apple TV password wasn't working, the Disney password. I was like, Jesus Christ, I just want to start a movie that I've been waiting. I have so many movies on my list, and the problem is, and I'm sure you have this too, you don't write them down. You're like, wait, I got to have a list. I got to have a list right next to my sofa where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to watch this. And so I'm an idiot for not making this list. Anywho, I go back to bed, and it's a middle of the day dream, really. It's like about a 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. dream. The strangest thing. And it was weird because it definitely started with my high school reunion or something, or whatever the equivalence of that is in a dream. And I'm definitely seeing people from high school. I'm not very happy. I ran into that guy Joe Salabi again, and it was nice to see him. But it was that kind of dream. And then I went to college, and I was in the dorms, and I remember just being absolutely miserable that I was going to have to spend at least a year here because I guess I was trying to up my college education so I could be a teacher, but then I was mad at myself because I was taking like an extra course but not like getting my master's, which would be helpful. So, you know, just one of those things. I'm like, you got to be kidding. I'm in this horrible dorm room and this is where I'm going to live for a year. You know, can you imagine? Going back to that, and I remember it was the manager, or now the co-owner of that bar I usually hang out with. She came in and was talking about her feelings to like my roommate or something, and I left for a second, and I came back, and she goes, "Hey, can you just give us another minute?" And I'm like, "Oh, fuck you!" I was so angry, and I'm like, "College is going to suck. This whole year is going to suck." So I got on my bike, wherever that was, and I went outside. So it was hard to find the way out, and I found my way out. And because it was definitely my old college, like freshman dorm, trying to get out. And then you know, who knows what it turns into in a dream. It was a nice day out, and I rode by my old managing partner coaching an all girls softball team, right? Classic dream stuff. And I'm like, look at this guy. Are you kidding? The guy, you know, where I got fired, this guy coaching an all-girls softball team. I don't know what that means. And they weren't like hot or anything. He was just happened to be coaching an all-girls softball team. I know it should be the other way where, you know, whatever. Anyway, I'm riding around on the bike and I'm driving and it's a lovely bike ride. I'm really having a good time. But I'm, you know, because I was miserable before. And I go by and I see Bob Newhart playing catch with somebody, and I go, "Hey, Bob, I'm Dave Juskow," because I, for some reason, I thought I knew him. So I said, "It's me, Dave Juskow. How are you?" And he just turns around, and maybe he knew me or maybe he didn't. I don't know, you know, because I don't know Bob Newhart. And then I go, the next person I see is somebody's talking about me. It's the grandfather from 16 Candles, not the Sammy Davis Jr. one, the guy that's like, "And may I speak to Samantha, please?" "No, you may not." You know, Donger, you know, that the guy that's holding Donger hostage, whatever. And I see that guy, and he's talking about Dave Juskow. He goes, "Well, I'm talking about Dave Juskow." And I ride by him, and I'm like, "It's me, Dave Juskow." And he's like, "Oh, I can't believe." And then I go by somebody else who was mentioning my name, and I'm like, "It's me, Dave Juskow." And then I got excited. And then all of a sudden, Sammy Davis Jr., his car was too big to get by where I was going. And I was coming down a hill. Yeah, I know, right? And he's dressed in his priest uniform from Cannonball Run or Cannonball Run 2. And there's a lift so I can actually take the bike over the car and over the railroad tracks and the train. Like, I got a good jump. And I am flying through the air on my bike. I'm like, this is incredible. Oh, my God, I'm going to make it. And I think I can make it even further. And I was trying to push it. I'm in flight. And I do this all the time in my dreams. I don't know about you guys. I fly in my dreams all the time and see how far I can go and kind of manipulate myself. And I have all this stuff in my on my bike that I'm like, all right, I'm going to get ready now because I'm technically now I'm just flying without the bike. So I want to get all my stuff together, my gloves and my computer, and I'm putting them all in one hand so I'm ready to fall properly. And then I get to a place and I'm like, uh-oh, I think I'm going to fall quick, but I got an extra gust of wind. And I'm like, oh, I see a big school landing. I see a huge landing. I'm going to do that one. And I somehow fly all the way over to the school and perfectly land in this like patch of grass in the school where all these students are hanging out. And I just come crashing down like in the movies. And I'm like, woo, wow, goddamn, that was amazing. Did you guys see that? That was incredible. And they're all just like, yeah, I guess, you know, like nobody really cared, but it was incredible. And then all of a sudden, as I'm just kind of hanging out there on the grass, like being like, wow, I can't believe I jumped so many feet. That managing partner guy comes in with the softball team and he's like, oh, no, it's Dave Juskow. And I'm like, oh, no, this guy. But it was in a good mood. And then I don't know what happened, but the girls of the softball team, they were younger girls, and they go, hey, do you mind if we post stupid pet tricks on our line? We love it. You know, the managing partner showed it to us, and I'm like, hey, this is turning out to be all right. And then I woke up, and I was like, and I woke up in a great mood, and the sun was shining, like it was raining when I went to bed. And I'm like, hey, that was a great dream, because it all went from the horribleness of what I lived through in the early days, which I'd never want to go back to, and even though, you know, there were obviously some good times in college for sure, but just knowing, oh my God, I hate life, I want to kill myself, nothing's ever going to work out, to where maybe still nothing has worked out, but there is joyous moments in life. What are you going to do? I don't know. Hey, listen, I have bad dreams all the time. I wake up all the time, always depressed. And so to have a good dream that I actually remembered the whole thing of it. Right, that's what I was trying to tell the softball team. I'm like, hey, did you see what I did? Did you see I took that bike? And I must have flown at least 50 feet. And nobody saw it. But it was an excellent dream in that sense because it started out bad and it turned out great. And I don't know why I wanted to share it with you because it had just happened. I almost woke up like only an hour or two ago. And to remember it, you never remember dreams, was really terrific. God, it's so funny when I think about it. I can remember a couple of dreams, even from childhood, that were so effective somehow in your mind that, you know, you really do wonder, where do these things come from? Obviously, Sammy Davis Jr. and Cannonball Run and, you know, the guy from 16 Candles. I think we know where those come from. My mind is a mess of 80s films, right? But the rest of it is just weird, and yet I don't know, such a hodgepodge in my mind, such a interesting week of stuff. So last week, if we're taping this on, this comes out on Tuesday, so we're taping on Friday as usual. The last week after I, you know, saw you last Friday, remember I went out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then I worked, and I'm talking about this past week, you know, from my job to home. I just went from a job, home, and just kept on working until at least midnight or 1 a.m. on my three-hour lecture I had to prepare for, one, for my mom's place, and then two, for the school. So it was an intense week of work and play. You heard about last week. So we open with the, and by the way, I'm not sure if we're going to have a fresh episode next week. I may have to do what are we up to? 1982 in film, I believe, because next week, that Saturday, is my mother's birthday. Now, obviously, I tape on Friday, but I can't edit it on Saturday. And then I'm going to be staying at my sister's, so I might put out an interim And it seemed like nobody seemed to mind. They enjoyed the 1982 in movie. So let me see if I can get something like that together again, and then we'll come back and everything will be fine. You understand. So anyway, Friday night, I saw the play Dead Outlaw, written by my friend David Yazbek, who will be on our podcast, the Billy Joel podcast, in 2 weeks, talking about that and some of his other plays and a little bit of Billy Joel, of course. That's in 2 weeks, if I can get everything together. I'm so behind on everything because school has and lecturing has taken precedence. What are you going to do? Well, I'm obviously still trying to bring you a fresh podcast every week. I mean, if you don't respect that, then you don't respect nothing. Friday night is the big Dead Outlaw play, and I'm very excited. So I leave, you know, it's very difficult leaving on Friday because I knew I had stuff all week long. I just really wanted to rest. Like I'm doing today, I ain't doing nothing. And I'd like to do something, but I'm not doing anything because I got to go out tomorrow. I'm seeing Book of Mormon with Teethy. I'm seeing it again because my friend's kid is in it. And then I'm good for Sunday, and then it all starts. But I'm good now. You know, it's not. Last week was insane. So I go see Dead Outlaw, and I go to the cellar first, and I stop in. I see SD, Keith Robinson, and Colin, and they're all eating. And I just come up to them, and they're all just giving me shit, and it's hilarious, and we're all ribbing each other. But it was really fun. And I was wearing a jacket and tie. No, I'm sorry. I wasn't wearing a tie, but I was wearing a suit and a very long jacket. I have like what we call my big boy jacket. It's a very nice cloth jacket that a person with money would wear. That came out the wrong way, but you know what I'm talking about. It's a nice looking coat over a suit in the wintertime in New York. Something that they might have worn in the 1800s. I should have been wearing my hat as well. That would have been interesting. So I hung out with them, and then I saw some of the wait staff, and they had photos of me from the party, so that was kind of nice. They're like, oh, look, I have photos. Like, I don't even think they know who I am. So I was really happy about that, obviously. And so then I went to the bar I usually go to and met the new bartender. I haven't been to that bar in the Village other than a Tuesday for years. Remember, they replaced my girl Lindsay because she got pregnant and married. And so I hadn't met this new bartender, and she was terrific. Her name was Sarah with a G. She's Irish, but she was incredibly nice. So she was great. That was on a Friday night. And it was great because I saw that guy, Todd, the other bartender again. And we were just talking because I had told him about how I busted that kid, that gay kid who was at the bar telling me that this kid played the cellar and it didn't. So it was great that we got to talk that out again. Yeah, see, I told you that kid was lying. So that was really great. So then my friend Laura, who I'm taking to the show, who's the lawyer now, who I've known since she was a paralegal at my old firm when she was 19, 20, she was coming with me. So she met me at the bar. We had a drink. And then I said, okay, it's 6:40. We got to go. So we left, which was, you know, it's right all down. This play is right next door to the Comedy Cellar in this beautiful theater space. And we left. And I'm about to go in, and I hear a voice say, oh, Dave Juskow, cutting in line as usual. And I turn around. It's my old managing partner from the old firm I used to work with, you know, that fired me, where I got Me Too'd. Now, I haven't seen this guy since 2019. But and it's just ironic that the dream happened today. Now, I've been dreaming about this guy since 2019. I have dreams. They're nightmarish dreams about running into him again because I hadn't seen him because, you know, I saw this guy every day for 20 years, then nothing, and he had to fire me, and it was a very not cool experience because I know he didn't want to fire me. It's just a stupid climate. This never would have happened if it had happened a year before. It probably wouldn't have happened. It would have happened 3 years later. But there's the height of the climate. We know now that I was being taken advantage of from this girl from my friend who works in HR, and I was set up, and now we know that. So I know when he came in to fire me, he was crying. He was really emotional. He did not want to fire me, but he had no choice. But I was still angry at the whole situation, obviously. And so whenever I have dreams about the old office, and I used to have them a lot, how can you not? That's not normal. He used to not appear in the dreams for a long time. And then as time went by, he would show up and everything would be fine. I always have to try and avoid him. Say, like my friend Joe would be like, "Oh, we got you your job back," and then you know just don't run into the managing partner. And then you know then later I started running into him and everything was fine. Like there was no because I always wonder what am I going to do when I see this guy because really at the very beginning I just wanted to punch him in the face, but I always wondered what would happen. And so now we know because I couldn't believe. He's there with his wife and his two other friends, and he goes, "You probably hate me." And I say, "No, no, it's nice to see you." And I gave him a big hug, and then I said, then I realized, I'm like, hey, look who I'm with. Look who I'm with. It's the girl from The Office, which just kind of made everything hilarious. Like, does this guy only date young girls from The Office? Is that? No, but it's really funny. So he goes, oh my God! I'm like, remember her son? She went to your son's college, and she knew your son. Like, it all came back, kind of flooding, and it was just so funny. The odds of me bringing her because I had a choice of chicks, right? I was gonna bring and bringing her. I mean, it was just beautiful. It was classic. So we saw each other. We were talking on the way in, and his wife is just kind of staring at me, oddly, because nobody knows how to handle a situation like this. Where, you know, I'm not even allowed on the premises of the way I was let go. And so I'm feeling a little uncomfortable, but I am happy to see him. So as we're getting the tickets, I told him my friend wrote this show. And then I'm waiting for him till he comes through so we can talk some more. Because that's why I want to make sure that he knows I'm really actually happy to see him. I'm not doing an act. And we walked to our seats. Now, the beauty was, you know, he's the magic part of the firm. He was sitting in the back. And me and my girl are sitting in the fourth row. Now, that is some nice stuff. I'm also wearing a suit. He's wearing a ridiculous ski outfit for some reason. I don't know why. his wife was dressed normal. And remember, I know his wife, too, for many years. It's just really strange. I don't know her as well. So we're sitting there. And let me just say, the play, Dead Outlaw, was fantastic. I mean, it was fantastic. First of all, one act, no intermission, love it. Just an hour and 40 minutes. The music was incredible. I wrote to David Yazbek saying, dude, this play is brilliant. It's I never thought I would like a play that's both parts, country and Western. And it wasn't all that, but it was really good. The narrator was incredible. The band was amazing. And then I told him the most important thing. I was like, I was with a girl who knows nothing about the theater, never goes, may not even like it, and she loved the play. That's the highest compliment anybody could get. So he was really happy I saw it. He was really happy that I gave him feedback. I said, however, I wouldn't. No, I didn't do any of that. But it was really good. And then it turns into something else later. The actors are incredible. The way they use the stage. And there's just one piece of scenery. This is not Broadway. This is off-Broadway. And this is an experiment in many ways. But it was really terrific, all about the worst train robber in history who, you'll hear it on the Billy Joel podcast, but he's a really bad train robber in the 1800s. He had a bad life. He starts robbing trains, but he's horrible at it. One time he robs the wrong train. The next time he blows up a safe and melts all the gold into one piece. He's a horrible train robber. And finally, he gets caught and shot, and nobody comes to pick him up at the coroner. And then people come, I heard he's an outlaw. And he's like, well, I guess I could sell this. So he embalms him, puts him in a box so everybody can see him with a rifle in his hand, dead outlaw, see? And he becomes a sideshow, and he gets taken to all these places, and he ends up, just dead, like Weekend at Bernie shit, and being traveled around the country, ends up in California, ends up where somebody finds him in the rafters of the $6 million man in 1977. So it's really great because the ending is like, born in 1845, died in 1977, or buried in 1977. He said, this guy had this whole career, became super famous while he was dead. And David Yazbek will explain that on the show. So he saw this article and he made a musical about it. That's a creative guy, right? It was really good. While I was sitting there, I said to Laura, I'm like, listen, I'm going to ask this guy, the managing partner, if he wants to have a drink. Let's be civil here. That would be amazing. let alone telling my friend Joe, you know, still works there, like, oh, you're not going to believe what happened. You know, I mean, it's just going to be epic. So I say, you know, we go back and they're still waiting there. So then the woman's lightened up a little bit. I guess, everything's explained. I'm sure they told his friends what happened and all that nonsense. But then I'm like, hey, do you want to get a drink? He goes, no, we have dinner reservations, but I would love to hang out another time. And I know he's serious. And I said, I would like that too. And we left again and we hugged and we went on our way. And it was just so amazing. And then I was like, well, I really want to wait till Monday when Joe goes to the office and he hears it from Andy. But I couldn't possibly wait. It, you know, if I'm planning a prank on somebody and I'm like, oh, would you like some peanuts? Are you sure you don't want to open your gift of the peanuts I got you? You know, with the snake can that comes out. I can't wait. I can't just leave the can of peanuts there waiting for somebody. Oh, don't you want peanuts? You look hungry. So I had to call him and tell him he couldn't even believe it. I mean, it really was. After all these years, the dreams and all that kind of stuff. So it's so funny that he's still in my dreams, but in a much better way. I think using the line that I first saw him today in today's dream. So crazy. So what an interesting evening already, right? So then I go across the street and I go to the Greenwich Village Comedy Club and I see, well, let me see if my friend Melinda is there, who was Al Martin's daughter, who just recently passed away. You know, we went to the funeral, who ran all the comedy clubs. Let me see if she's there as long as I'm here in town. And there's some idiot guarding the door. And I go, hey, can you tell Melinda that Dave Juskow's here? And he goes, who? And I'm like, this guy, right? And so he goes in, and I guess he forgets my name. And Melinda comes out, and she's like, what? Why didn't she just come in? She didn't know it was me. And I'm like, this guy wouldn't let me in. I got him in big trouble. It was awesome because, you know, they want me to come in there. And the waitress, Tiffany, who we love. And then when she found out, she's like, oh, it's Juskow. Because the way apparently this guy described me, he goes, there's some guy out there. I don't know if he's with the mafia or something. He's wearing a long coat. He has slick back hair. That's the way he described me. Because I was wearing a suit, and it's like nobody comes to the Greenwich Village Comedy Club dressed like that, I guess. And that's why it was funny that Tiffany's like, don't go out there. Don't go out there. It's too risky. And then, you know, it's Juskow. Jesus Christ. So we go in, and we just go to the back in the kitchen and have a drink, and me and Laura. But it's great because I know Melinda likes me a little bit, right? So she sees Laura. Now, remember, my friend Laura has huge boobies. I mean, epic boobies. That's not why I like her. I mean, it's not why I don't like her, but I'm not a big booby guy, but she has huge boobs and there's nothing you can do about it, right? So I think that's at first why the managing partner's wife was just like, who the hell is this? You know, like, because then he remembered, oh, you used to have blonde hair and you used to do that. And she's like, and I think that's what threw her off. And I guess it had nothing to do with me. And so then when we meet this girl, Melinda, she goes, who the fuck is this? Like, she was really angry, like if I had a girlfriend or something. And it was really funny. Like, she was definitely spying on me when she was doing work and her and Tiffany was working. I was talking to the bartender with my friend Laura, and they were, like, listening in from the back room, just making sure everything. Like, that. She was definitely, like, jealous. But it's funny. So later on when we're at this restaurant, and I'll tell you in a second, she goes, I don't understand why everybody's looking at me. I'm like, you have huge boobs. She goes, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not showing them off today. I'm like, I know, it's not your fault. It's just, you're going to get shit from people. You got big boobs. There's nothing you can do about it. She's like, I know you're not, but you're going to get the looks from the other girls. They're going to be angry. You must go through this your entire life. So I felt bad for her, but not that bad. I think you know what I'm talking about. How are you? Anywho, so we go up to the cellar. And I see my friend Dave Rath just sitting there, and he's like, do you want to hang out? I'm like, no, I'm with my friend, and we just saw the play. And then Sam Morril comes by, you know, just right outside the cellar. And we were almost thinking of sitting down. I'm like, no, it's too cold. I could look at her face, and she's like, no, she doesn't want to sit outside. Why would she want to sit outside with her huge boobs? So then we go to this place, Monty's, which is right in the middle of the Greenwich, and it's right on McDougal and the Comedy Cellar. And I like this very small Italian place. Everyone minds their own business. You know, they have a pull chain, the box and the chain, the toilet, the pull chain toilet, you know. Now, it's possible somebody could plant a gun. But it is that kind of place. It's a nice, small place. Everybody minds their own business. It's perfect. And so whenever I go there, I have spaghetti and meatballs because it's that old-fashioned, right? So we go in, and we had a great meal that was very perfect price. You know what I mean? Appetizer, two meals, wine, very cheap. I mean, really, just the way everything should be. So I was very happy, and we had a good time, and she was having a good time. We had a great night, saw a play, had dinner, you know what I'm saying? So it was a really good time. Dessert at the end, a little, did I have coffee? Yeah, maybe coffee. I mean, very, maybe it was like $160 if it was even that much. So that's pretty good, I think. And then, of course, our waitress, who we liked very much, oh, because when we walked in, the waitress gave this look, and I'm like, oh, the kitchen's closed? And she's like, no. And I'm like, well, you just kind of gave a look like you were like, oh, sorry, you guys. But then I realized that's her default face. That's her default face. Oh, sorry, you guys. And then I felt bad. But she was really nice. And then I kept making fun of the face. But your face, and, you know, and then I was like, you know, maybe she doesn't like us. So she left. And then this other guy came over with the fucking electronic check. This small little mom and pop place had that stupid electronic check. He is standing over my shoulder. And I am, again, being, hey, you don't have a survey? I'm going to take my time. I'm being a dick because I don't care. I can't take it anymore. This is not the proper way to have it. You cannot have people staring over your shoulder when you're filling shit out. It's just not right. They have to leave that machine. From now on, I'm going to be like, can you leave this with me for 30 seconds, please? Come back in 30 seconds. I'm going to have to start saying that. And what's the difference after the meal has already been served and cooked? You don't have to worry about it unless they can remember you the next time you come back. That's the only thing that's bad. But I swear to God, but I don't have a memorable face, so I don't got to worry. Am I right, folks? How are you? Ugh. God damn it. So anyway, I walked her home, and she lives you know, closer to First Avenue where I'm going to walk. And it's pretty cold and windy. And I'm like, well, you know, now I've walked enough from the West Village. I've told you I like to walk to 23rd and 1st, and then it's good. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to take an Uber. I'm nicely dressed. I'm going to take the Uber. And I press the Uber button, which I, you know, as you know, I never do. It says, and they're confirming it, like, great, you're all hooked up for the Uber. It was very, you know, good, well-priced. And they said, it'll be here in 18 minutes. And I'm like, what? 18 minutes, so I cancel. I try again. This time they say 22 minutes. And I'm like, you're kidding, right? I mean, what the fuck is this? So then I go look up a cab. It's the same thing. Like, they're just the price is too much. And I'm like, I don't want to pay that, and I hate cabs. And I'm not going to do that. And I go back to the Uber. And I'm like, all right, let me try the Uber one more time. And all of a sudden, it's up to $25, which it was not. It was like $16-17 at first. Now it's up to $25. I waited too long. It wasn't raining. And I'm like, screw this then. I guess I'll just wait for the bus. And the bus was crowded. It was really annoying. I had to stand the whole time. And of course, I'm wearing a suit on the bus that doesn't fit. But, I mean, not that it doesn't fit wearing it on the bus with other people that suck. But I took the bus home, and it was such a pain in the ass. I thought about walking, and I'm like, I'm too done and sleepy, and it's over. I really want to get home now because I have another big day tomorrow, let alone I have to work in the morning.
I want to tell you the true story of the dead outlaw, Elmer McCurdy.
All right, boys, let's go rob that train.
Your mama's dead, your daddy's dead, your brother's dead, and so are you.
Saturday, I wake up, I work. As soon as I leave, I do the whole thing all over again. I leave the house exactly after work. I get down to that bar at 6 o'clock where I'm going to meet my friend Rachel Lenahan, the comedian who has that horrible girl open for her. And this time, I have the same drink at the bar with that really nice girl, Sarah, with a G. And we go down to the show, which again is, you know, right in walking. The bar just happened to be where we were going last night. So we go to this place. I can't remember the Le Poison something. It used to be this old place, and but a really nice underground place. Haven't been there in years. We go down. We have, like, preferred seating table. Yeah, so I go in, and I'm like, yeah, we have preferred seating. So she goes, oh, you can sit anywhere. I'm like, well, where exactly? Because we came. I always want to go an hour early, but I know people don't like that. And, of course, people were already seated. I'm like, fuck. She goes, right here. And I'm like, and she doesn't really bring us. So we go somewhere, and I'm like, this seat says reserved on it. This doesn't make any sense. I go back out there, go, I'm like, are you sure we're allowed to sit there? Because it says reserved. She goes, oh, no, you can't sit in the reserve. I'm like, you just pointed us to that table. She goes, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Well, then can you tell us where the fuck we can sit? I was like really getting on my nerves, right? Because you pay extra for this shit. And well, this is for, I'm sorry, I'm talking about Paul Lauren and Julian. Oh, what the fuck is his name? I can't even remember because I was so angry at him at the end. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm going to see these piano guys. I'm trying to be there for support because they've been both on our, very polite, on our Billy Joel podcast. And so that you know how I feel about Paul Lauren. So I'm always trying to support him. So he comes out. So fine, we get our seats. I get that same drink. It's all I've been drinking since Tuesday was ginger ale and rum, my new drink for some reason. It doesn't give me a headache, and it seems to get me a little buzzed, so it's perfect. So we order that, and then the show starts, and Paul goes first. Paul's opening for Julian. Jesus Christ, I can't remember his name. Isn't that funny? That's why I'm so disappointed with him. So Paul gets up. He's got a drummer and a bass player, no guitar, and Paul's on the piano, and he's terrific. His original songs are great. I am bopping. I'm having a great time. Then he does a rendition of Miami 2017 that is just as spectacular as the live Billy Joel actual version from Songs in the Attic. It's wonderful. It's a great show. He does, I don't know, a half hour, and it's great. And then there's an intermission, and Colin Smith is there, and I see him, and we're just hanging around. We come back, and then Julian, I want to call him Julian McCullough, but that is not his name. That is a comic. And anyway, Julian gets up, and I'm just, he was awful. I know, it's horrible to say. It's just that he was so bad. I was texting Rachel going like, when is this going to end? I was doodling, something I never do. They had put a pencil for remarks. I was making Hitler hair and a Hitler mustache and Hitler and a swastika because I was thinking of the Larry David episode with our favorite one with the gay kid. And, oh, what's that? That's a swastika. Ooh, I like it. It goes this way, that way, this way. Well, they should sell that at every store in New York. Well, I don't think the Jews would like it. Lighten up, Jews. No, get a life, Jews.
So, what are you drawing?
Oh, I'm just doodling. That's a Hitler mustache. That's Hitler hair.
What's a Hitler?
Oh, Hitler was a bad man.
A bad man?
Very bad man.
Oh, my God.
Yes, he started a war. He didn't really care for Jews. He thought they were a bit much.
I would kick his butt.
Would you?
Yes.
Good for you. What's that? What are you watching in there?
Project Runway. Good show.
And what do you like about it?
The fashion. It's like the best show ever.
You like fashion?
Yes, I do.
Hmm.
Ooh, what's that right there?
Oh, that's called a swastika.
I like how the lines just go straight and then up and then down and then straight and then up and then down. It's beautiful. My birthday's coming up in a week, so can you get me one?
A swastika?
Yeah.
I don't know, Greg. I'll have to think about that.
They should start selling them in every gift shop in New York City.
Yeah, I don't think Jews would like that.
Get a life, Jews.
And why is he awful? Okay, right. Well, the problem is he's doing my least favorite thing, which is one of the reasons I can't stand Billy Joel sometimes, and he's obsessed with Billy Joel. And he's playing Piano Man three times during the show because he's a Piano Man guy, and he wrote a song that we played on Billy Joel A to Z before called Please Don't Make Me Play Piano Man. And I can play a little for you that now.
It's 11 o'clock on a Wednesday. I'm badly in need of a break. There's a beautiful blonde singing next to me. She's making all kinds of mistakes. She says, I heard this song once when I was 16, and I've loved it my whole life long. It's my 21st birthday and I'm really drunk, and everyone will sing along. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 no. Please don't make me play Piano Man, 'cause I've already played it 5 times tonight. I don't expect you to understand, but my hands are too sore and my heart is too tired to put up a fight.
And it's a really good song, and that's fun. So when he's doing original songs and he's singing the full song, I'm good. But basically he's talking, and he's talking, and he thinks he's funny, and Rachel even goes like, I can't stand musicians who think they're funny. You know, he's not that funny, at least to us. And I mean, he's not funny. And he just is playing little, well, then I was thinking about doing this, and he plays like little bits. And I'm like, no, dude, play the full fucking song. This is the Rock of Ages all over again on Broadway. When we're sitting there and they say, hey, it reminds me of Night Ranger. Or Sister Christina, then they start doing it, you're motoring, and then they stop. And my friends are drunk in the back because they allow you to drink and that they want you to drink thing. And they're screaming, which I scream now all the time, finish it! Finish it! Don't leave us hanging like this. You're just giving us little tidbits. That's what Billy Joel does sometimes. He's talking about his songs, and then he'll play a tiny bit of it, and you're like, finish it! That's why I don't like medleys, unless it's the Barry Manilow Very Strange medley, then I can let it go. Meanwhile, I'm still mad at Barry Manilow from the last time I saw him live, where he's doing, you can find this podcast, he's doing Ready to Take a Chance Again, I'm only getting a snippet. I'm there to see. And I'm ready to take a chance again. Ready to put my love on the line for you. You know, I want to see the whole song, like in Family Guy. That's everybody's favorite Barry Manilow song out of nowhere. People think it's I Write the Songs or Mandy, but the fact of the matter is, Barry, if you're going to do this again, it's Ready to Take a Chance Again. Turns out that's your biggest hit, dummy.
Good evening, I'm Tom Tucker. Coming up, important traffic news that can't help you because you're someplace where a TV is.
But first, get ready, Quahog, because Barry Manilow will be performing this weekend at the Quahog Performing Arts Center.
Barry Manilow.
What a joke.
So stupid.
And boring as hell.
Yeah, no kidding.
You couldn't pay me to go to that thing.
Hey, you know what we should do? We should go, just as a goof.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, just look at all the idiots.
All the dumbass Manilow fans.
Yeah. I mean, he's got like one good song.
Yeah, I mean, Mandy is not terrible.
Yeah, the opening's okay.
And I guess you can't hate Copacabana.
Yeah, if you're in the right mood.
Daybreak is a good song.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good song. And I like Weekend in New England.
Yeah, it's a good one. Looks like we made it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Right?
I love Barry Manilow.
Oh my God, he's the best!
I have everything he's ever recorded!
Me too! In my car!
We have to go to that concert!
We are going to that concert!
And I'm ready to take a chance again. Ready to put my love on the line with you. Been living with nothing to show for it. You get what you get when you go for it.
And I'm ready to
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I'm furious at Julian. It was nice. I'd never met him before. We only met over Zoom, so it was nice to see him. I tried not to tell him anything bad, but I told Paul, and I'm like, I don't understand. You were amazing, and you keep your mouth shut. You know, you take a couple of jokes, and sometimes Paul seems to realize he is a musician and not a comedian, and Julian doesn't seem to get it. Not that I wasn't angry. I was just like, bored, and it was going on way too long, and fortunately it ended. And Rachel and I, they were going to an after party. I'm like, nah, let's get out of here. I don't want to go to that. I might say something nobody wants to hear. And then we went to I found a new sushi restaurant because the one that, you know, I used to go by the cellar was closed. And then I didn't really love the one on Sullivan. So on Thompson Street, there was another one that was open late and it was really good. And we had another lovely dinner. That's two nights in a row, a show, dinner, a little expensive, obviously, but I was planning for it, so it's okay. And then, you know, home and still working the whole time and trying to put together these lectures. It was a really rough weekend. And then I walked all the way home that day. I was like, I got to walk. I got to walk. I got to do some exercise. So I walked all the way home from the village, all the way to my house. And then Sunday, did it all over again. Worked in the morning, worked the whole day, left the house at exactly right after work at 4 o'clock, went down to the New York Comedy Club where it was this guy Ryan's birthday. I thought it would be polite, but I was like, why not go? All these really pretty girl comedians that I like are going to be there, including Olga, and I hadn't seen her in a long time. I'm like, I just saw the managing partner from, let's break bread with Olga at this point. And she was very happy to see me. She was like, she was wearing glasses because she started to cry because, you know, she knows she was naughty. But it was nice to see her and hang out. And we all hung out, all these people. And then we went to another bar. So I was drinking again. Then we went to another bar and I left there at 12:30. Met some very nice people, but I left there at 12:30. I mean, I was at this bar from 5 to 12:30. And the birthday boy, who I like very much, gets very drunk, like where he either is crying or beating somebody up. And we like to leave before he's the only one because I don't know how to get him home, but I feel bad. And I'm like, look, I got to go because I don't want to be left to take care of him. And I'm not trying to be a dick. I can't handle it anymore. He's insane, you know? But I'm like, look, Olga's like, well, I feel bad. I got to stay with him. And I'm like, well, we spent 6 hours with him. It seems like that would be enough for anybody for a birthday. I really feel we've done our duty. So she was very kind and stayed with him. And I hadn't eaten the entire day. So I walked home and I actually stopped at this pizza place I used to go to back in the 90s, which has changed hands multiple times, but they had this incredible pizza. I don't know what it was. I wish I could get it ordered to my house. It was delicious. And I just ate it as I walked, old school, because I was really hungry. I hadn't eaten a whole day, and I drank, walked all the way home again, and then did it again the next day on Monday. And I even woke up earlier and went to work and then came home and worked some more. Then I did it on Tuesday and went to work and did the show, the YouTube show for you guys with Nick, and then did more work on these projects I had to get together, and then did it again on Wednesday. And, you know, up until 12:30 at night, 1 o'clock. Like, normally, as you know, I walked home Monday, too. I walked the 5 miles, walked home, got the two slices of pizza, ate it, and then normally I sit on the couch, and I'm like, I'll just sit here for 20 minutes until I get back to work. And you know I doze off. This time I wouldn't let myself sit on the couch. I turned off the TV. I was so proud of myself. And went to the computer and worked until 1 in the morning every night to get all these things together. And then finally, yesterday was my class with everything. Remember, I had to go see Rhoda first, the second episode of Teaching the Broadway. This time, Beth came. This time, my mother wanted to introduce me again. I'm like, absolutely not. But we had lunch beforehand. I had a grilled cheese, and I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be such a great idea. And then the podium this time was on stage, so my shoes always squeak. It was a whole thing. It doesn't really matter. But the lesson went really good again. Beth called me later and said, hey, you were terrific this week. So everybody's enjoying the lecture, so much so that the people that worked there said, hey, you can be here every Thursday at 1 o'clock. You have this slot. Whatever you want to teach is fine. It's really going well. And I'm like, that's great. So let's just stick with the 6 weeks for now, because I'm already angry. I got to do more work after May. I figure, well, I can take a break, but I don't know. We'll figure it out. But I'm going to continue the 6 weeks in the Broadway and then, you know, figure out something else. And then I don't know if I'm doing the two. I mean, I know I'm doing the two classes, assuming they fill up. Then I can't do it on Thursdays anymore. I'm going to have to figure out another way. I don't know. And then they're going to be sick of me, so I got to take a break and just do six at a time. I think that's the way to go. Or who knows? Maybe they don't even remember who I am from time to time. You know, they are 100, so it's all right. Anyway, so then I go to the campus, and I've got the rest of the semester figured out. First of all, I do want to say we did 1988 and 89, and I showed an extended. I said these. The 1989 holds two of my favorite movies of all time. And I did extended clips. And I showed them a clip of Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And I said, you don't understand. This movie is spectacular in a completely different way from all the shit we've talked about. And obviously this director went on to amazing things. Ocean's 11 and 12 and 13, all that kind of stuff. And Aaron Brockovich. And, you know, just, but this was a starter movie. This is a movie that you guys could make once you leave school. It's very limited and only has four characters. So I was trying to explain it to him and show the scene. I know, you know, one of the girls loved it. She can't wait to see the rest of the movie. The other, who the fuck knows what these people like? I can't figure it out. And then I showed them an extended scene of Crimes and Misdemeanors, mostly the funny parts with Alan Alda, because they'd already seen the serious part. Meanwhile, I wanted to show that film on the last day of school, but it just doesn't fit, unfortunately, into the 80s curriculum of what I've been showing them, The Short Thing and Fast Times, you know, so it's just too much. So here's the way I figured out the rest of the semester. Think about this. This week, I did the scroll roll where I divide the class into fours, and here's the movies they have to watch and then explain it to the other students. 1986, Back to School. They seem to like that. 1987, Three Men and a Baby. Because I'm like, look, explain to us how the fuck, this was number one at the box office, okay? So watch that. 1988, Cocktail. And 1989, I gave him The Big Picture, Christopher Guest's first directorial debut with Kevin Bacon and the amazing Martin Short. And I said, listen, this is a film nobody knows. You let me know. But it's about a kid who just comes out, and a bunch of kids that just come out of film school and what they do after film school and how difficult and the movie business is. So I thought they might like it. I guess we'll see next week. But here's what I told them. I said, next week, we're going to come and we're going to talk about these films. If you come to class next week, you don't have to write a paper. You just have to jot down some notes and make sure that you get your points, and I'll grade you on your, I don't even know if you can say this, oral presentation. If you don't come to class, you got to write the paper. And now that seemed completely fair to me, and everybody seemed to be okay with that. That's a real fair trade-off. The week after, I gave him the new assignment, which is taking the characters that you had to come up with in one of the assignments. You had to come up with a character, just like we did last semester, because we're talking about Amy Heckerling and how she came up with the character of the dad in the movie Clueless, and how it's based on her dad and her brother and the sayings they said. So I said, do you have a character like that you could plug into a movie in your life? Like my nephew picked his best friend. He's like, oh, he does this kind of stuff. Or this girl picked her boyfriend. He's like, yeah, he's kind of one of those Jersey Shore-like characters. And I said, so take that character and plug it. I'm going to give you three scripts. One of the scenes from Mr. Hand and Spicoli with the pizza delivery scene. And take that character and plug them into either character, whether it's Spicoli or Mr. Hand. Maybe it's a parent you're picking, you know, my dad says this, so maybe that's okay. Or Clueless, or the scene with her and Elton, or the scene with the father and Christian. So, you know, you could choose those three, choose a movie of your own where you plug it in, or just write your own script, like a page and a half, two pages. And the next week, you have to come to class. This is on the 25th. You have to come to class. You cannot get an A if you don't come to class and read your scripts in front of the class, because it's not fair for the people that just don't show up to do okay, you know, to not put themselves out there, because these people are putting themselves out there. I'm writing about a character in my life. I'm reading a script. Maybe that's not my thing, script writing or reading in front of people. So they have to get rewarded for coming to class and putting it out there. And if you don't come, and I bet you a lot of people don't show up and just take the B, then, you know, that's your punishment. I might give them extra credit to make it up if they really can't make it, but we'll see. But that's the class. And then a week after that, we're just showing a movie. So that's what I thought was a fair deal, and everybody seemed to be okay with it. Nobody complained, and that's the end of the semester. And then we're done. I saw my posters for next semester's class up there. The rom coms, completely clueless again, and hopefully that'll fill up. And then doing the 80s one again, which I didn't see up there from 2:30 to 5. I guess they get a feeling that's not going to fill up again. I don't know. I don't know what my reputation is over there. You know, I have my windows open today, and it's always so loud. You know, that's why sometimes I keep them closed in the middle of the night, because then I can't sleep when there's so much hustle and bustle outside. But somebody is singing. Remember last time there's somebody playing the piano right outside? The piano was on the sidewalk. It's like I live in the West Village or something, that there's always music going on, but I don't. It doesn't make any sense. But it was just such a nice breezy day, I thought to open the window, but then it always distracts me from the podcast. Anywho, so really I talked so fast, I got through everything really quick, but I really didn't do anything. I mean, I know I did Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then I didn't do anything Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So there wasn't that much to discuss. But so next week, it's so much, you know, I asked my sister if I could stay over, right? Because I got to go to my mom's on Saturday for the big party, which is so stupid. I don't know. And then we have to see her stupid show of Finding Nemo. We all have no choice. And then, you know, there's an off day, but then Monday is Passover. So I'm like, can I just stay over for the weekend? But I know she has a full house. It's not her fault. Normally it wouldn't be an issue, but the whole family's home. And so she's like, well, maybe we can get you a hotel. And I'm like, a hotel? So I'm looking up hotels. And yeah, I'm sure I can find one, but I mean, that sucks, right? Because then, so now if I go to the hotel, I got to go in Saturday, right? Stay over, then I got to work Sunday at the hotel till 4. Then, you know, then I got to leave the hotel by noon. So I got to take lunch at a certain time, then try and get to my sister's by 1 o'clock so I can work from there. I mean, it's a real pain in the ass, and it's going to cost money. I don't know. Maybe we could work, or maybe I should just go home on Saturday night. It just seems like a waste since I got to be back on Monday, but I guess I'll figure it out. Maybe I will go home. I don't know. It's such a pain in the ass, and it's major wear and tear on this very old car, and obviously it's just going to get more and more expensive. Yesterday, gas, I guess I let it go a little bit, was $50, and, you know, when I saw the tolls, they were $20, and, you know, that's almost $100 going just where I need to go just on Thursdays to make $100. So it's very confusing, just this going back and forth and everything. But so I have to teach a couple more weeks in May, but that's, I mean, just at my mom's, I'd be going down there anyway. I guess it doesn't matter. And then at least I can take a break from both things at the same time. So that's actually helpful. And I don't have to put any more lectures together for class. That's why I hope the thing I'm teaching now does fill up, because I've already done the work. And I'm going to change the class around next semester. I'm going to really concentrate on a couple of things instead of going through everything. But obviously it was my first time, and my first time with the 3-credit course, so they were all guinea pigs. But their papers are getting better, in the sense at least that they're finally figuring out. I just want their opinion and not just so much structure as it is just, you know, tell me what you think. And that's what makes it, because you can't do something on film unless it's a strict writing class. That's, you know, you can't write a thing about a film. If I like it, they don't like it, how can I say that's wrong? You guys get that. So anyway, I guess there'll be an interim one next week. I guess. I'm sorry. There'll definitely be a, well, right, I don't know about the bonus, but there'll be a bonus show this week. So I'll figure it all out, because then I also have to tape. I can't do the Tuesday show because it's Passover, so all this kind of stuff is going to be figured out by next week. You'll know everything, and we'll get back to business. It's so funny. I really thought I was speaking so fast because I thought I had so much to do, which I did have a lot to say, but yet nothing. So a shorter show today. That's not a big deal, and we'll come back blasting for sure in at least 2 weeks, if anything else, and I just hope everybody has a wonderful week as we kind of quickly go into May, where the weather will be so delightful. Hopefully we won't get where it just instantly goes to summer and there's no spring. We can all just take a breath of the clean air on 42nd Street, as the mayor told us in 1865. All right, everybody. I'll see you next week. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next time on Just Gow the City. Good night, everybody.